everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. For this episode, we have a very special guest, which is Jason Yeh, the former head of esports from Riot EU. But before we get stuck into talking about how the landscape of the European esports scene has changed over the last few years, and actually looking to the future of, you know, why esports is an exciting investment proposition, I just thought we'd take a step back from the overall show and speak about where the roundtable is moving in the future, and where you guys can help. We are 12 episodes down so far. We've had some absolutely fantastic guests from across the globe of esports, from team owners, publishers, tournament organizers, startups, and other industry experts. We are well aware that in terms of making the show more accessible, there are lots of things that we can be doing to improve that. And one of the main things that we're focusing on for 2018 is moving to live over Twitch, Facebook, and a few other platforms. The feedback that we've had, all the listens so far, honestly makes my heart feel so very warm. I'm super optimistic to share some more awesome content with you guys over the years to come. But I've got one favour to ask everyone as we roll into the end of the year. Ratings and reviews are absolutely paramount to kind of elevating the exposure that any piece of content has online. It would help bring the show to a bigger and better audience. It would help to attract more amazing guests, and it would also help us stay laser focused on what you guys actually want to hear, and where you want to see the roundtable move in the future. So as of last week, the roundtable is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn for those people that want to use their Amazon Echoes. We're going to be asking for any and everyone to send us a quick review on any of the platforms that you use, and that will just really help us to kind of move forward, and make sure that when we do move to live, that if there are any specific areas that you want us to tap into, we can stay ahead of the game on that side. So once again, thank you for taking 1 or 2 minutes to listen to that. And without further ado, let me welcome on Jason Yeh onto the show. Jason, thank you very much for sitting very patiently while you listen to that lovely public service broadcast.
No worries, thanks for having me on.
Awesome. So me and you have been working together, I think it's over 2.5 years. I think the way that we started was I actually applied for a job with the Riot NA office when I just stumbled into esports, and they said, no, you don't have the right expertise, but our Riot office needs some help on the recruitment side. And that's why we started speaking. It's been a long journey, and you've recently exited the Riot EU operations. I'm sure that we'll explore that slightly over the next few minutes, but it would be great just to hear your story about how you got to where you are now and your history as a gamer in your personal life.
Sure. So I think, as with a lot of people at Riot, have a very non-traditional kind of route into the games industry, and also like in the different roles that I've had over the years at Riot. I guess I'll start off and first say, a lifelong gamer, played all different genres of games. I would say primarily console. I grew up in the US on the East Coast. Was a big player of all the EA sports titles, because I'm a very hardcore sports fan. I'd say spent a lot of time playing or spent a lot of money buying the new versions of everything from Madden Football, NBA Live. Played a lot of NBA Street. Originally played Winning 11, Pro Evo, and then got into FIFA. I would say in general, I've always been really into sports, and I think that kind of colored my early gaming experience. I would say coming out of undergrad, I studied business and international studies at UPenn. Didn't think that I would work in the games industry, and didn't make that my focus initially. But my route into Riot Games was a fun and interesting one. I had a unique opportunity to work in venture capital early in my career. I spent 2 years working at First Mark Capital, a New York-based VC fund. And one of the first days at the office, I met Mark and Brandon, and that kind of kicked off a long relationship where First Mark was, alongside Benchmark, the first VC investors into Riot. And 2 years later, just before a League of Legends launched, I moved out to LA to join the team at Riot. I'd say the initial focus of my role was helping to work in publishing and launch the game in the US, and launch the game into a couple of new markets. I spent quite a bit of time working with Tencent on the Chinese launch, working with Garena on the Southeast Asia and Taiwanese launch, and then also focused quite a bit on supporting launch and operations in Europe, Turkey, and Brazil. Spent 4.5 years working in LA, focusing on international launches, and then the past 4 years moved out to Germany to open up our office to create and operate esports in Europe. I think one of the things which really drew me to the region was it's one of Riot's largest regions, very large player base, very highly engaged. I think it's a lot more challenging than a lot of our other markets because it's multi-country, multi-language, multi-culture. It's been a really fulfilling opportunity to work out in Europe, and yeah, I'm excited for the future.
It's just so crazy to think back that just on like one of your first days with the VC that you met those guys, and it's just kind of rolled into this. However many years later, it's just always makes me kind of stop and think that the chance encounters that you have with people in the business world, and just if there's that kind of click in a perspective, or if they have something complementary that you don't, that there's just so much that you can do in the future. It's just amazing to hear that journey. The outward message about League EU Esports has been relatively confusing this year, and I'm glad to see that there's a kind of a more clear track of where EU is moving with regards to franchising in 2019. So it's very interesting. And as a massive League fan, it was my first MOBA. It's just always been so cool to see how the industry has received the title in a different areas, and you guys have had to do a lot more groundwork in each individual region. Like, I've noticed so much of the UK specific content when I'm in game, and there's a lot of trial and error when it comes to actually speaking to the audience in the right way, so it's lot harder.
If you think about it, like, players on our European server are European players. Like, they don't think of themselves as European players. They think of themselves as, I'm a French player, I'm a German player, I'm a British player. And so creating experiences for them that help them to kind of like build off of that identity and make that like a core part of like why they're excited about the game and why they're excited about esports is important. And I think, like, does it come with challenges of like not having just a single market where like the sponsorship scene is centralized and there's only like one language? Like, sure. But I think there's also a lot of exciting opportunities because of it. And I think that is pretty unique to regions like Europe, regions like Southeast Asia, regions like South America as well, where you have like so many different and unique, exciting cultures that are like building a love for the game and building a love for the esports around the game.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons why we can look to see why European esports as a whole has maybe lost a step after being the home for so many of the kind of most winning organizations in the history of pro esports, you know, with the massive Scandinavian teams, Fnatic being based out of the UK, as well as so many others across multiple titles. And now I feel like we're very much behind what's going on in North America specifically, as well as Asia Pac. And it's been one of the things that I've been trying to lobby with the UK government through UK and other organisations. There's going to be a lot more news on this side over the course of the next few months with what we're doing there. But it's just seeing how far behind the UK scene is and Europe as a whole. So it's sad, but the main obstacles are clear and quite simple to understand, which are the ones that you pointed to, that it's just so fractured and so fragmented. Let's take a kind of historical look at esports in Europe. I would say that esports as it is today, with the kind of massive arenas and the kind of team-based loyalties, well, it was made into reality by League of Legends globally. What's your perspective on looking at how the EULCS perhaps has been one of those standout frameworks over the last few years, and also how the rest of the esports industry in Europe has kind of started to move forward, and perhaps what we do better than other areas of the industry? Like, I would say that our casting talent is a lot stronger, I would say. Not just from a League perspective, but I just think that like UK is only really represented in the production talent, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Europe in general, it is a lot of esports kind of stems, like, has strong roots and foundations in Europe. Like, even Riot's, like, first season world championship before we started running LCS was held at DreamHack. And I think it was really from that event and seeing, like, how much interest, not only with the really hardcore subset of players who we thought would actually participate in these type of events, but much more broad audience that wanted to just use esports as a form of, like, League of Legends esports as a form of entertainment, I think was really eye-opening and really helped us to kind of shape our strategy over the coming years. And I would say it's very easy to just broadly categorize all esports as one industry, but I think as with traditional sports, it's important to realize that, like, for each individual game, just like for each individual sport, like, there are a lot of nuances, there are a lot of different dynamics, and there's a lot of different opportunities.
Yeah, of course.
And so I think one of the things which is interesting about League of Legends, not only in Europe, but all around the world, is we have a very large player base in almost every, like, market where there is online gaming. And I think that serves as a foundation for us to engage those players to create an experience outside the game, around the game, for them to enjoy and make part of their everyday life. And I think one of the things which was true early on for us in Europe was it wasn't like those players were concentrated in any one market. We had a lot of players across Scandinavia, Germany, France, Spain, Poland, Mediterranean, Southern Europe, etc. And I think because there were so many people playing the game, like, they were looking for other ways to engage with the game and around the game. And having, like, pro teams come from your country or having pro players come from your country is a very organic and natural way to feel excited about something that's happening in the game.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We had the CEO of Astralis on a few weeks back, as well as the CCO from Refresh as well. And we were talking about player houses and player management and kind of how can you enable these people to step into a business world or treat themselves like a business and be adult and mature past the pro exposure. And one of the things that they were mentioning was that a lot of CSGO pros have to have a bit more individuality when it comes to their own personal space, just because they're on the road so much, just because the structure of the season is so chaotic. Whereas, say, team houses and centralizing all your resources from a team perspective just makes so much more sense for League, where everything is focused around the same city for the region with a lot of predictability. So that makes a lot of sense. Super exciting, though. Like, I'm really curious to see how in 2 or 3 years time where the NALCS is from a franchising perspective with that LA focus versus the Overwatch League, which is going to be kind of starting to move out some of the focus to the local arenas, and whether that just starts to diversify where the audience focus is and if content starts to suffer in terms of exposure apart from that, because I think that's one of the reservations for the EULCS expansion into kind of more national markets, was because this is going to be so much content and you're having to field so many more orgs, and potentially what the quality of the play and what the focus of the audience has become lost in the raw noise and volume of everything that's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, really quick on the NA side, just as like a spectator and as a fan, like, if you look at the orgs that they announced this week, it's very clear that not all of the orgs are based in LA or from LA or identify with LA. So I think that's something that like anybody who's creating a league needs to think about. How can you appeal to like non-overlapping fan bases? So like fan bases that are distinct and unique. Because I think ultimately the day of like a fan just liking every team or like half the teams is there will still certainly be people like generalist fans, just like there are for any sport. But I think like a lot of sports are fueled by intense, extreme fandom for one org, for one team, for one player. And I think that they have a very diverse group of orgs, a combination of like long-lasting orgs who've been in the scene for a while and some exciting new orgs. So I'm curious to see as a fan kind of how that plays out.
Yeah, cool. Let's take a step away from League. I do appreciate you asking those questions. I know that you've recently exited Riot, so trying to work out the diplomatic tightrope while still providing some value to the conversation must have been difficult, so I really do appreciate that. Let's move on to something that you will have a lot more freedom to speak out, which is the general state of investment in esports. Talking about some of the League of Legends free agency, I mean, we are recording this on the 22nd of November. It will go out next week, so perhaps the news cycle has moved since we've spoken now, but looking at just the quotes of player salaries and player acquisition, we've seen Team Liquid hoard a huge amount of players, obviously, for their academy teams as well. But there's a huge amount of cost of entry to even play at the tier one esports level, either from an actual hard in-game perspective or actually from the business side as well. So I know from our previous conversations that you actually have a what I would consider a relatively contrarian point of view about why you personally wouldn't necessarily, as a VC these days, are not going to be making esports your biggest focus. Why are you more cautious about the market than what it seems like a lot of other people are?
So I'll give some quick context first. So like before joining Riot, I worked as a VC.
Sorry, I'm jumping in.
As a VC at Firstmark. Over the years at Riot as well, like I've angel invested in a number of companies outside of the game space. And I would say like my statement of not focusing on esports is the general one of not focusing in any one particular vertical or area. I think at the end of the day,
of course you've got to hedge your bets, right?
Yeah. It's not just hedge bets. Like I think like at the end of the day, like for me personally and for what I would look to do from an investment standpoint, it would be broadly centered around like finding companies that make like high quality products, services, experiences like more accessible to people around the world. So looking for companies that are like really looking at building international products and audiences. And I think like could something be an esports? Sure. But it's not an area that I'm like zeroing in on. I spent quite a bit of time looking at and being a part of esports over not only the past 4 years in Germany, but also more broadly, like as Riot was spinning it up from LA.
Yeah, of course.
And I think one thing to keep in mind when you think about investing in esports, I go back to my earlier point around. I don't think people are making broad investments in esports category. Like they're making bets on different titles. So actual individual esports is like saying like, I'm going to bet on soccer or I'm going to bet on tennis or I'm going to bet on American football. I think that ultimately this is such an interesting space because there are a number of games around the world right now that you can argue like have higher engagement, higher player base, have higher activity than a lot of traditional sports, which over the years have been the more popular childhood, high school, college activities. And so I think because of that size of audience, because of that amount of engagement, there is a very large captive audience that is hungry for entertainment, content, things to cheer for. And these are also people who don't watch TV anymore, rarely go watch movies, haven't paid for music for over a decade. And so I think like this audience is difficult to reach and is tough to interest. And I think one thing that you see is for a small handful of games, so for games like League of Legends, CSGO, you could say Overwatch, Dota 2, like they have a lot of players around the world. And I think that gives them an opportunity to like create experiences for those players that are not core to the gameplay itself, so esports being one of them. And so when you have that kind of intersection of like very hard to reach audience with incredibly high engagement, I think that there are going to be interesting investment opportunities. I think it just goes to finding like which types of opportunities make sense for different types of investors. And when I made the comment, it was more from a VC standpoint, because we talked a little bit about VCs investing directly in teams versus investing in technology platforms versus investing in game companies. And I think ultimately there's potentially a lot of different areas where you can make successful bets as a VC. But the reality is, and if you look at the asset class, most VC investments aren't successful. And most VC fund returns are driven by investments in like a small percentage of companies in that fund. And so you could probably make the argument that a lot of VC investments aren't great investments because that's actually what the numbers show. So I think the interesting thing about now is that there are more types of investors coming into play. And with different types of investors, they have different objectives, they have different time horizon, they have different experience that they bring to the table. And I think that that's really interesting because I would argue like a VC probably is a little bit more focused on helping a company drive to some type of sustainable business model in the short to medium term. But then you can argue that for a lot of, for example, traditional sports team investors, like sports teams around the world and in the U.S. have proven to be not a very good short-term investment in terms of operating cash flow. Like you look at the NBA, and it's like half the teams lose money, and they're good teams. So teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers, teams like teams that make the playoffs, the Clippers, salary grew a lot faster than the revenues which came in for the teams. And so I think in those cases, like it's a tough business in the short term because you need a lot of cash to be able to just stay in the game. But then you can argue, well, as the audience for these teams grow and the audience for the league grows, then at some point in the future, you can sell your team. Like Robert Kraft bought New England Patriots for much less than it's worth today. You say the same thing about like Lakers, Knicks, et cetera. Like when they were initially purchased by their current owners, like they were like the league was a different league. The audience was a different audience. And so even if they didn't make money from running the team in terms of revenue coming in versus cost of running the team, they can still get great asset appreciation when they ultimately sell the team. So I think different types of investors bring different objectives and different approaches to the table. And I think the other exciting thing is like they also bring different expertise and different ability to help teams to the table. So I think it's good to have like diversified a group of professional investors getting involved.
One of the really interesting kind of EU examples that I would point to about just how high the burn cost can actually be for an esports investment is looking at Gfinity in the UK. They made some absolutely fantastic hires from World of Sport at the start of this year, with the UFC closing down their most of their European commercial team. I think three or four of those jumped on the Gfinity bandwagon. But all of these executives that have brought on with a fantastic experience and their non-endemic network and approach and strategy and gravitas, it makes just the average run rate for simple staffing, it must be over 1.5 million per month just for those people alone, let alone everyone else. And then you're looking at the kind of numbers that they're getting from the Elite series and a bunch of other pieces of content and the partnerships with the BT and BBC that are pretty much just free PR from either side with little short-term commercial value. It makes my head kind of boggle about how the investors are like what their actual aims are, because they've had about two or three rounds in the last 2 years. I'm sure there are Gfinity executives that might listen to this and might not necessarily want to talk to me afterwards, but it's just been one of the things.
I'll say this, like as a spectator, and I actually don't know too much about like what's going on with Gfinity, their investors or what the business plan is, but I'll say this in general for any investment. So I'll say like if I'm looking to invest in a company, I have to believe that the people running the company can either hire the right people to make the business successful or and also have a clear plan for how the business actually becomes sustainable and how it actually becomes profitable and grows. So my assumption would be like there is a plan in place. There are smart people who are making these investments, and and a lot of successful companies like burn money initially. That's why there's entire venture capital asset class, is because in order for some businesses to get to a point where they are break even or they are profitable, it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of money. You can argue like a lot of these like publicly traded companies that are multi-billion dollar valuation are still not profitable. And so I think ultimately the investors have to be comfortable that the right team is in place and they have the right business plan and business model. I think that's the important thing. And for, I would say for esports in general, like when looking at investment opportunities, it's good to think about like what are opportunities for companies to create or capture value. And for example, like we talk a lot about the growing audience and the engagement and people watching the broadcast and being fans. Like the reality is like for the biggest games, the ability to monetize that the engagement of a live broadcast is concentrated with a small handful of companies that own the IP and produce the content. And so that's good and all, and hopefully the revenue that's generated there can be reinvested in the ecosystem through like revenue sharing with teams and through other things. But that is not something that is necessarily like easy to access for an independent third-party startup company that just wants to get into the space. That being said, like I think one of the figures which is quoted in a lot of conferences, panels, etc., is about how like the average esports fan spends a lot less per year as a fan than the average, I don't know if they use like basketball fan or football fan. But I think that's probably true. I don't know the exact numbers, but at the end of the day, these are people who are heavily engaged, are big fans. They're making hours of time per week to engage with this experience and to cheer on teams. And there should be like more and better ways for them to like contribute to the ecosystem. And I think there will be opportunities in and around esports for specific games. It's just about finding the right ones and then finding the right people who can go after it.
Yeah, and one of the recent examples that I think is a great way of seeing those smart solar space actually activate in a really smart way, but it more in the form of sponsorship, is the Mercedes partnership for ESL One Hamburg. We've spoken about it on the podcast previously, but just the amount of memes that are being put up from those guys and from the users as well. It's something that I've heard James Dean from the ESL UK speak about multiple times. I know that we could stay on this specific topic for probably an entire podcast. As always, every single episode, my producer looks like he's going to murder me because we're starting to hit the end of our time slot. So I've just got one or two more questions for you before we say goodbye for this episode. You have had the luxury of having two lovely rays of sunshine step into your life over the course of the last few years. Just break down for me, as a 25-year-old dude, the impact of parenthood on your, not just your life, because obviously it's massively on your life, but on the professional focus and trajectory of why you do the things that you do and why being able to work from home is awesome.
So my wife and I live here in Berlin. We have two daughters. Bella was born February of 2016, so she's about 21 months. And then Devin, our newborn, is 2 months. She was born in September of this year. And so actually, like, that was the one of the driving reasons for taking a step back from day-to-day role at Riot was transitioning to life with one child was difficult and was...
And it was crazy busy, I remember it as well. Yeah, it was just like the worst
time. It was exciting. It was the best experience I could have imagined. It's so good that we decided to have another one within short order. So I think ultimately, like, one of the key drivers for stepping away from Riot day to day is wanting to be able to spend more time with family, raising both of the girls here in Berlin, being just more actively engaged. It's something that is important to me, is important to our wife, and kind of like tied to how we were brought up. Yeah. And I think like we have that ability to do that, and so it's something that we want to take full advantage of. I think at the same time, it also did serve as a good kind of trigger point for thinking about like what I personally wanted to do longer term. And I think one of the things which I really appreciate from my experience at Riot is I've gotten to see a lot of ups and downs. I've gotten to see a lot of like interesting challenges that we faced and how we went about overcoming them and things that we learned. And I think like related to that, I would love to see how I can take some of these lessons and some of these experiences and be helpful to people who are looking to start companies, not only in the game space, but across any space. And I think the reason why the Riot experience is so relevant, or I guess like two things about the Riot experience that are relevant, are like Riot is a very player-focused, customer-focused company. And I think ultimately going forward, if you create any product or service or experience, it'll be really important for companies to really understand their audience, engage their audience, understand what they want, know how to communicate with them. And so I think that is a critical aspect that a lot of companies need to think about. And the second is, like, Riot is a very international business. We have players all around the world, and we have a very unique way of reaching them, engaging them, and supporting them. And I think increasing number of companies are looking to not just focus on people who live in any one area, but to grow user base, to grow an audience that spans multiple markets. And so would ideally like to take some of those learnings as well. So I think it's something that I'm excited to finally be able to spend what time I'm not spending on the family, which in the near term is a lot of time focused on family. But I think because of the two girls as well, like I am spending a lot more time looking at thinking about family-oriented product services, early childcare, education, content for kids and parents, et cetera. I think that it's a space that is ripe for disruption. I think there's a lot of companies and products that are very successful and popular just because they have been successful and popular for a long time. And I think as a new generation of parents that is increasingly connected, aware, looking up information online, trying to understand what's actually good for their kids, I think there's a unique opportunity to create better products and services for them. I'd say that being one area, and more broadly thinking about like how is the world going to be 20, 30, 40 years from now, and what are some of the big problems which like we do need to start thinking about, and we need to be able to apply a lot of this technology that we've developed over the years to some of these like more pressing pressing issues around whether it's like environment there's a lot of exciting things going on.
We don't want to kick the hornet's nest and start talking about global warming and everything, but it's absolutely fascinating, and I think it's a real luxury to be in that position, to actually have the time to get involved in all those projects, but also spend extra time with your family. So definitely cherish this period as much as possible. Just got one last question for you, which is our fun recurring segment that we've had every podcast so far. This week, we're going to be calling it Chrono Break. Very, very appropriate, as it's Echo's ultimate in League of Legends. But Jason, if you could have any role in esports, past, present, fantasy, or future, what would you choose and why?
If I really had to be pushed to say like what other job would be interesting, I'd say like if I had gone back in time and actually just gone to China instead of Europe, I'm sure that would have been an awesome experience as well. But I have no regrets and nothing positive thoughts about coming out to Europe.
That's it's one of the more nimble diplomatic answers that we've had. There have been some people that have been slightly more salesy about, you know, oh, if I could start it all again, I'd be doing exactly the same thing that I'm doing now because I'm really excited about this project that's going to be coming up in the next few weeks. You tie it back into the historical context.
If people want to dream, like people can dream however they want to dream.
That's true. I think
it's very difficult to apply like, hey, like dream bigger. I think ultimately whatever makes people happy makes people happy. And I really do think at the end of the day, like working in esports at Riot and with like entertaining League of Legends player base, creating things to make them excited and watch on a weekly basis, whether you're doing it in Europe, China, North America, Korea, Turkey, wherever, like it's a very unique opportunity and it's a really fun job. So
I'm not judging. I'm just saying from the viewer perspective, like we've had some amazing answers and that one was very well put together. So
I'm sure you should poll your listeners on what they think their dream job would be. And I'm curious or list
That's
like
a very good one.
The answers that the different guys that you had on said and see which one would actually be the most popular with your listeners. I'm curious.
That is a much smarter call to action that I'll definitely be stealing from you in the next few weeks, I think. Jason, we've smashed up against the clock. I feel like there are aspects of the conversation that we've had that we can really dive into in a lot more detail. I really appreciate you spending some time on the show. As a personal public thank you as well, working with you guys in Berlin was one of the core foundations for helping me be in the position I am in the industry right now. So I can't thank you enough for rolling the dice on a guy who was just insanely passionate and didn't have a massive amount of experience at the time. So that means a lot. How can everyone reach you if they want to get in touch?
I guess you can just follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Oliver. I'm not that active of a tweeter, although like when sports season, especially NFL, is on, I'm a
furious.
How do I say unabashed New England Patriots fan? And I know a lot of people hate the Patriots and hate Tom Brady, so yeah. I'm happy to engage with anybody on Twitter if they want to, while the Patriots win another Super Bowl.
Okay, awesome. If you want to reach us, my Twitter is at Barely Qualified. On Facebook, we are at LFG Esports HR. But once again, every and all feedback sent through would be awesome. Jason, I'm definitely going to be stealing those ideas. Guys and girls, thank you very much for listening, and we will speak to you soon. Cheers.